Welcome to Classical Conversations. I'm Haley Taylor. Today we are chatting with conductor James Blatchley about a new, exciting historical recording. It's the very first recording of Dame Ethel Smythe's 1930 symphony, The Prison. James, thank you so much for joining us today.
My real pleasure, and thank you for pronouncing my name and Smythe's name correctly. That's unusual.
Oh, good. I'm glad I got it right. This is such an exciting recording, and I think first to understand how exciting and important this recording is to first talk about Ethel Smythe. So can you maybe give us the elevator pitch, a little bit on who she was and her life and her work as a composer, but also as an activist?
Absolutely. Yeah, Dame Ethel Smythe is the most famous and accomplished composer that you probably haven't heard of. She knew all the composers that many of your listeners will be familiar with. Tchaikovsky wrote a letter of recommendation, Brahms she knew personally, has some amazing stories about encountering. She was in many ways influenced by Brahms, and that's another story. But Dvorak, Grieg, and of course she is influenced by Wagner, as was everybody of her generation. But she lived an incredible life, one that is worthy of a feature-length film, not just a historic documentary. Every chapter is fascinating. But just to start at the very beginning, she had a passion for music and decided she wanted to become a composer, which was unheard of at the time for a woman to become a composer. And against her father's wishes, she moved to Leipzig at the age of 19 and studied in the conservatory in Leipzig until she determined that it wasn't rigorous enough for her. And she began to study with Heinrich von Herzogenberg, who was a close friend, as was his wife, of Johannes Brahms. And living where she was in Leipzig, she was actually really at a crossroads of German musical culture. And she encountered so many people that we know well. You know, the Mendelssohn school was alive and well. This kind of resurrection of Bach was just in its heyday. And so she was very much influenced by Bach. But she lived in a very heady musical world where her early counterpoint exercises were reviewed by Brahms himself, apparently favorably. And she had this incredible confidence about her, about the value of her own music, and she carried that with her entire life, no matter what the world threw at her. She was the first woman to have an opera performed at the Met in New York City in 1903, and the second female composer that the Met presented in their illustrious history was in 2016. So she's really an important composer, and I would argue not just because of what she did despite the misogyny that she faced, and not just because of her activism, although that is definitely important to talk about, but because of the value and quality of the music that she composed itself.
It's so interesting. I mean, what is your opinion on why Ethel has kind of slipped through the cracks? As you mentioned, she became the first woman to have an opera performed at the Metropolitan Opera in 1903. And yet it doesn't seem like there's a good amount of connection to her work today. I even asked some of my fellow classical music fans if they were aware of her work, if they knew of her compositions and they were not familiar with her. Why do you think that happened, that she kind of again slipped through the cracks throughout history?
Yeah, it's a great question. Certainly the question I hear most frequently when people encounter this piece and her music more broadly is, why have I not heard of her? And I think it's a great question. I asked myself that question as well. And I think part of it is how we teach music history, and also how we program in general, which is to really focus on the, quote, great composers, and this kind of idea that the great composers are one line and it's a baton that's passed from one to the next. And what we miss is a lot of other rich material. And then we start to ask who gets to determine what is considered great. And those are questions I started asking after encountering her music. The reason she fell off the radar of the top level classical groups and the awareness in general, I'd say is twofold. One is that the criticism of her works has been consistently malicious and quite hard to swallow. Very misogynistic criticism. You may have read some of it. One critic said, a remarkable achievement for a woman. There were criticisms of Derwalt that it was both too masculine, according to one critic, and too feminine, according to another. And so I think this critical history colors our understanding of her work. Certainly when I was researching her, I saw, you know, these very negative reviews. But audiences loved her music, and there are these accounts of 15-minute standing ovations after her works, after Derwalt at the Met, and there was a 15-minute standing ovation. So, you know, critics were not convinced, perhaps, but the general public was, and musicians as well. So I would say misogyny is one reason. The other would be the wars. She was very much a German composer. Obviously, she's English. But she trained in Leipzig, and her musical heritage has so much to do with the German tradition. And many opera houses in Germany were the ones that were presenting her work, at the turn of the century. And I'd say the worst thing that happened to her career, and also to the world, was the First World War. And she really had to overcome that very difficult hurdle of, you know, her operas being presented more and more often, garnering greater acclaim. You know, before Mahler left for the U.S., he was planning to perform one of her operas. Bruno Walter was a champion. I mean, she had this great history of being championed by great conductors. And then the First World War happened. And then the other great impediment to her being heard more often was the Second World War. Her publisher was Universal, which was in Vienna. And when Nazis took over in 1939, she withdrew her permission for them to use her works. She withdrew her copyright. And so after her death in 1944, there was something of a gap where it wasn't perhaps as easy to acquire the performance materials for her works as it might have been. But then I think the third part is that people saw her more as kind of a novelty than as a composer in her own right. And they saw her activism, they saw her, you know, friendship with Virginia Woolf, and her going to jail for her beliefs for, you know, suffrage, for women's suffrage, the suffragette movement that she was so key in helping. You know, she wrote the March of the Women, which was the anthem of the suffragette movement in England, and very much influenced the United States in our own struggle for equal rights. So I would say perhaps those other parts of her personality became known more than her music itself. And then I would just say that the conductors who were championing her were no longer alive. And when someone falls into the kind of back channels of the eddies of the musical life, it can take a little time before they're discovered again or returned to prominence. But that is exactly what we're hoping this recording will help to do, is bring her back into the limelight and allow the musical world to fall in love with her music the same way that all of us who have encountered this piece have.
And it's important to note, when mentioning the history that's connected to the life of Dame Ethel Smyth, that the release of this album is also connected to history. It's going to be released August 7th, which coincides with the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which gave the women the right to vote here in the States, and obviously connects with Smyth's role in the suffragette movement in England. For you to have modern listeners maybe listening to Smyth for the first time on this recording, obviously it's going to bring her back to the forefront, but do you have any other like wishes and hopes and dreams for the listeners getting their hands on this album and listening to it for the first time?
I do. I really hope that everyone who encounters this piece for the first time will open their hearts and open their ears and let it speak to them personally. Let it speak to them in whatever way this music does for them in their life, you know, right now. Instead of thinking too much about her role historically, instead of focusing on her identity, and although those are very important things, let this piece speak on its own terms. Let her music speak on its own terms. There's a quote that I might try and pull up, where she says, "The exact worth of my music will probably not be known till not remains of me, but sexless dots on lines on ruled paper." In other words, people will not understand my music on its own terms until, you know, nothing remains of me but the music itself. And I encourage people to listen in this way, you know, with the music speaking for itself, for two reasons. One is that's what she wanted, and the other is that's how I encountered her for the first time myself, and it was so powerful. The first experience I had listening to her was in person, was when I was conducting the first rehearsal, and so I had studied the piece and was prepared for that rehearsal, but the first sonority is so expertly wrought, and the color is so particular to Smythe's individual sense of sound and flavor and color, that I got shivers up and down my spine, because I realized in that moment that this piece had never been heard, you know, on this continent with orchestra until that moment in that first rehearsal. And Dashan started singing the opening, "I awoke in the middle of the night and heard the sighing of the wind." This incredibly poetic beginning that tells the story of the philosophy of her very close companion, very close collaborator, incredibly close friend, Henry Bennett Brewster. So I was just, the music itself moved me to tears many times. I've found it so compelling. And for the past 4 years, I've found more and more layers to it, like any masterpiece that I've studied, including, you know, all the great symphonists that we know and so well. This is a piece on that level. You know, this is a piece that deserves to be considered in three or four listenings or more, and it deserves to be heard in all the great concert halls around the world.
Well, James Blatchley, again, thank you so much for joining Classical Conversations today and for bringing this, again, very first recording of Dame Ethel Smythe's 1930 symphony, The Prison, to be released August 7th on Chandos Records, recording with the Experiential Orchestra, as you mentioned, featuring soprano Sarah Braley and bass baritone Dashan Burton. Thank you so much for joining us today.
This has been such a pleasure. Thank you for those excellent questions and for this conversation and for the time to share this with your listeners.